This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We're going to go to Sinead on line one, and Sinead has a story to tell. We were discussing recently the impact of smart meters and what impact they're having on electricity bills. And there are other issues to be discussed as well. Sinead recently got a bill from Electric Ireland, and it was paid yesterday. Another one arrived. Sinead, tell us the story.
Hi, I received my original bill from the 8th of May to the 4th of July, and I have paid it. It was paid on Thursday. But I usually get the bills through email. I got another email yesterday asking, dated from the 5th of July to the 5th of September, looking for €230.64. I rang Electric Ireland this morning, and they have no recollection of it.
Right.
They said my bill is clear, and that it didn't come from them. They said it was a scam.
Right.
I think it's a scam.
But did it have your account number? Did it have details related?
It has
to
my account number on it. Yes, it has my account number on it, and it has obviously my email and the email that they would use, because I actually read it out to the man on the phone from Electric Ireland, and he says definitely not. Definitely didn't come from them. So,
okay, what payment method? It presented you. What was the bill? Was the amount it sought the same as the amount in your original bill?
No, it's not. It's double the money. Like, it's double the price.
It's double what's in your original bill?
Yeah.
And was there a different, did it sort of say, this needs to be paid into a different account number? Did it give an account number? Did
no,
it give a phone number? How did it propose that you pay it?
Well, you see, I was looking at the old mill, and it does say, like, you can pay through the link, or you can contact them, which obviously I didn't even go near the link. I went into a different app on my phone for Electric Ireland, and I contacted that way. It's direct debit.
No, so direct debit. You do have a direct debit. So, I mean, and if you have a direct debit, that
do,
basically means Electric Ireland will submit a genuine bill to your bank, and then it will the bank will pay the money when the direct debit demand is made. So if a legitimate direct debit demand comes from Electric Ireland, then the bank will pay it. If a demand comes from elsewhere, it will not be deemed legitimate by the bank, and it won't be paid. That's the way the bank is. Because I'm wondering if this is a scam. Are they effectively sort of trying to get you to make an... I mean, are they claiming it's an extra payment, or are they just presenting it as an ordinary bill?
It's just presented as an ordinary bill. There's nothing other than, you know, there's nothing wrote on it. They say anything different. That's just when I rang Electric Ireland. They said definitely didn't come from them. And my bill's clear, so...
Right. So obviously you haven't given any money to anyone. Sometimes I find when you get scams like this now, and I've seen some scams, particularly ones that purport to come from banks, but the fact that this had your account number on it is concerning. Very often what will happen is, I mean, and I often get notifications from banks that my account is in arrears, and they're banks with whom I do not have an account. So not only do they not have my account number, I don't have an account with them. And I'm sure you've had those too. You get them regularly.
You get them via text
and email and so on. And, you know, and the basis on which they operate, the basis on which they operate is that if they send out 10,000 emails and one person responds, if one in 10,000 responds, then to them, that's a win. The fact that this appears to have had your account number, the caller is also asking, did the scam bill include your MPRN number?
Oh, God, I'm not sure. I'm going to take one and look at it again.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean...
It definitely has my account for Electric Ireland on it anyway.
Yeah, but certainly when it comes to sort of scam emails like that, don't ever click a link, but sometimes if you just hold the cursor over the link at the bottom of your email browser, you can actually read what the link is. If it says here, and, you know, if it says, you know, you can pay here, and the here is highlighted, if you hold the cursor over that, and then you look at the bottom of the screen, very often you'll find the bottom of the screen says www.blankensplot22224446.ru or some ludicrous combination like that. And that's when you absolutely know it's a scam. It's one of the telltale signs. But I mean, certainly if something like that has an account number, because you wouldn't, there's no reason why anybody else should see the emails between yourself and Electric Ireland, except yourself and Electric Ireland.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was afraid of. Like,
I mean, it is a concerning one, and I hope Electric Ireland do. I mean, are you getting the impression from having spoken to Electric Ireland that, that they're going to do something about this? And more importantly, did they give any indication they've heard of this happening before?
No, he didn't. Yeah. He just said that it's probably one of them scams. The way he put it to me is one of them scams going around.
If it's probably one of them scams, which it very possibly is, but I mean the real concern is that scam contains important details only known to yourself and Electric Ireland, and you know if there is some way that people are accessing your account number. Now, someone says once we got two bills from Electric Ireland the last time, we just paid one in the post office. Now, but you're saying it's not a duplicate bill. It's two different amounts.
No.
Yeah.
It's two different amounts, and it's, as I said, when I rang them, my bill, I knew my bill was clear anyway. It was paid on Thursday through direct debit, and this one came in the door yesterday, and I thought, my God, I just rang them this morning.
I would follow this up again with Electric Ireland, because I mean, if this is a scam, I'm really concerned about the addition of the account number, because I mean, to be honest, if I were on something like that, it's the addition of the account number is something that I would be concerned about. I mean, I know I once had an issue with a mobile phone provider where I rang them one day three times, just absolutely double checking that I had received a demand for a payment. And I rang them to double check it was genuine, and they said, no, it is genuine. And I rang them again, and I rang them again, because I was just something, I was unsure. In the end, it was paid and everything was resolved. But I think I would get back onto them again, because if someone has accessed your account number, how that happened needs to be investigated. But in the moment, Sinead, listen, thanks indeed for speaking to us. We'll throw that out there. Has anybody else had that specific experience of actually receiving a scam with an account number on it? Because it is a concerning one. Sinead, look, all the best with it, and hopefully you will get this one resolved. But thank you for the moment.
All right.
Okie doke, Sinead.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okie doke. Bye-bye now. Well, our discussion on the issue of teaching religion and should religion be taught in schools during school hours before the break has certainly sparked a major discussion. Caller says, tell that man Protestants have their own schools if that's their religion. I'm a Catholic. I went to a Catholic school. Anyone who doesn't want to learn religion in a Catholic school, well, all I would say to them is don't go there. Another caller says, how come the argument is all about removing Catholic schools, nothing about Protestant or Presbyterian schools? I think in fairness, Education Equality Ireland will argue that all teaching of religion, irrespective of denomination or religion, should be taken away from schools, and they want to see all taken. Another caller says, my daughter now learns about other religions in her class, and she says it's great. It's really given her a better understanding of other faiths. Caller says, a judge ruled in a case taken by parents that teaching children one religion in schools is a form of brainwashing. It happened in Belfast last year. That man is right. Parents should be looking after the teaching of religion. Another caller says, is this another paid group trying to change our culture? Caller says, many years ago, Cromwell and the English took over our Catholic churches, and those churches are still in Protestant occupation. Now there's a charge to confiscate our traditional Catholic schools. Go build your own. Leave our Catholic schools as they are. Another caller says, if you don't like Catholic schools, send your children to Educate Together schools. There are options. In a world that has so many diverse religions, the teaching through schools should be mandatory to educate people and help understand other religions and their beliefs rather than not teaching and education. Therefore, children will only learn from what they see on TV, maybe radio, which could be misunderstood. Also, we are a Catholic country. Why should we not have our children taught in a mandatory setting? Now, the caller says, who does this man propose teaches children religion if it's at the end of the school day? Outside of school is different to at the end of the school day. Another caller says, well, isn't that typical? They want no religious instruction in school, but plenty of instruction, indoctrination on sex, gender, education. What about the parents who wish to have their children educated in a Catholic school with Catholic values? Send a questionnaire to all parents in each school and see what they want, and then talk change. Other caller says, good morning, Ray. Religion in schools. How can your guest represent all parents, and how did he obtain the opinions of all parents in Ireland, and where can we get those figures? Education Equality Ireland is the name of the organisation. If you look them up and check their website, I'm sure you can ask them for that information directly. Another caller says, a policy was introduced in France that you can't wear any religious items to school. Muslims are not happy with this as they wear head coverings. Teachers are scared to death as they might be killed due to extreme religions, so says a caller. Now, just a few of your comments before we go to our Wellness Wednesday spot. We'll be discussing water safety and the risk of drowning ahead of World Drowning Prevention Day, which happens later this week. Caller says, so refreshing to hear John's comments. I agree 100%. The guy on before him saying to teach religion after school because it's a belief, not a fact, and how Irish society has changed, but allow teaching on ridiculous ideologies to very young children, which is hugely confusing and impacting negatively on their mental health. It's so dangerous, it makes my blood boil. These people think they're so enlightened and smart, but I will never accept their dangerous ideologies, and thank God every day for my precious Catholic faith. My beautiful mother passed on, a very intelligent woman of great grace and kindness. Another caller says, with no disrespect to anyone, all this religion is a big story. There is nothing behind any of it. It's a big, big lie. Another caller says, why do people describe the Irish flag as green, white and gold? This is putting the Protestants down once again by not calling it orange. Why were there no media in Rosnala to cover the orange parade? Protestants are always put down. Caller, I think there were some media in Rosnala. There was certainly coverage of it. And I would respectfully say, I will respectfully say that the reason there isn't a huge media interest taken in Rosnala is that very little happens in Rosnala. Rosnala has traditionally been a very peaceful and a very happy day in which thousands upon thousands of members of Orange Orders come to Donegal. They march, they enjoy their day, they follow their culture, and then they go home and there is no trouble, there are no issues and there are no problems. And I suspect that's one of the reasons that there is little coverage of it. A lot more comments to come on the whole issue of religion and some of the other topics we've been speaking about today. But let's go now to Zoom, and on Zoom we are joined by Roger Sweeney, Deputy CEO and Marketing Manager at Water Safety Ireland. Roger, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Craig. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. This is a Donald presenting today. Roger, it's World Drowning Prevention Day on Thursday, and it's an opportunity, I suppose, for you to copper fasten and refocus the key message of Water Safety Ireland.
Yes, actually, it's a good thing to start with, is World Drowning Prevention Day, because I'm sure a lot of listeners won't be aware of this, but it's actually tomorrow, but that Ireland actually brought that UN resolution into the UN in April 21. It was passed, actually, Greg, and that was significant not only for Ireland. We, along with Bangladesh as a country, brought it, and it was passed, which is fantastic. But it meant that countries around the world then were tasked with, for example, creating strategic plans and looking at their drowning burden overall. And so we've now today launched a, or issued, I should say, a drowning report that looks on drownings over 5 years, Greg, because sometimes, as your listeners will well know, certainly like a day like today as we have in Galway, it's cloudy, it's raining, people are not as inclined to go to the water. But over 5 years, you can build up a picture of the behaviours and what exactly is that burden. And I think a lot of your listeners will be quite surprised to learn that of all the drownings, nearly 600, Greg, over that five-year period, only a quarter were swimming. 25% of the total. The exact total was 588, but a lot of people are surprised to hear that it was a quarter that were swimming. The vast majority, 61% actually, were taking part in land-based activities. They were walking, they were hiking, they were angling from shore, and that type of thing, you know, even foraging. So certainly didn't mean to go into the water. We're not swimming in the water, so that's why our message today is very relevant, not only on a global scale for World Drowning Prevention Day tomorrow, but certainly on a local level, and especially too when you start to dig a little deeper, you start to see that males accounted for the vast majority, 70%, and you know over half were over 40, because people often say to me, "Oh, is that the teenager that gets into difficulty?" No, the vast majority, more than half, were aged between 40, in the 40s to 60s.
I have to confess, I am very surprised. I am very surprised at that statistic that the vast majority of people who have actually fallen into the water from shore. And the sort of presumption most people would have is that, look, if I fall into the water, I'll just swim back in, get back out and go home and get my clothes dried. It's not always as simple as that. And I suppose maybe we don't think about things like potentially getting caught in reeds. We don't think about things like maybe hitting our head, maybe getting caught in currents. And we don't give the water perhaps the respect it deserves in that context.
You're spot on. Absolutely. I've heard it from so many people. But sure, I'll just get out again. And even swimmers have told me about getting into difficulty where they go into the water on purpose, obviously. But that a slightest current might take them away from where they went in, and suddenly they're in deeper water. It's a little more difficult to get out. You mentioned entanglement issues there as well, Greg. You know, there are all sorts of factors that will take you 10, 20 feet away from where you got in. And they're swimmers. So can you imagine if you fell in, as you described there, and as we say, it's the vast majority. And, you know, we've spoken before, and of course we have to remember, you know, that every one of these figures, it's a life. You know, there's a person behind this, and you know, every community around the country nearly has been affected by drowning. It takes 10 lives on average every month. You know, so that's a lot of families, a lot of communities affected by essentially preventable accidents. Really, suicides do present, you know, in the figures. Actually, they present more than 30%. Actually, just under 40% of drownings in that period. But when you look at the preventable accidental factors, as you say, falling in and thinking you can get out isn't as easy. Particularly when you have water is a lot colder than the air that you're walking in. And so that can be a hazard as it is for swimmers, but certainly falling into colder water will cool your muscles and it makes it far more difficult to stay afloat. And of course, alcohol too that can lead to risky behavior too. It's a factor actually in about a third of drownings. But overall, Greg, I think, you know, whatever about the statistics, I think the human factors behind a lot of these incidents is that sometimes people can overestimate their ability and underestimate the risk. And what I mean there is that you can underestimate the risk by simply even arriving to a waterway and not being aware of rip currents, for example, you know, and knowing that you need to stay within your depth, swim within your depth so you can get out if you get into difficulty, if you get tired, and also knowing how to get away from a rip current, which is essentially often only about the width of a road, for example, right? They can be wider, but not much. And so just floating or swimming at an angle will get you out. But just back to the perspective on the drownings themselves, the vast majority, 80% of them actually were coastal as well. So that's a bit of a change we've seen, you know. We analyzed drownings on a 5-year basis to kind of establish the trends I mentioned at the start about the weather, for example. So the previous 5 years to the one we looked at, we've come down by nearly 20%, 17%. So that's a good news, if I can say that, you know, that it has come down. But they used to be, the vast majority of drownings used to be inland, and now we've seen 20% of them roughly are inland, 80% are coastal. And of course, you know, people are not surprised to hear that the majority of them, over 40% of them are in, you know, area Dublin, Cork, Galway combined. But, you know, the burden affects everybody. You know, there are 19 accidental drownings in Donegal alone, you know, but we look at the figures per 100,000, you know, so I kind of tend to look at the coastal counties, you know, so say ourselves in Galway, we were at 2.4 per 100,000. Donegal was a little lower than Galway, a little lower than Clare, a little higher than Mayo, just to give that Atlantic shoreline per 10,000.
Over the past 2 years in particular, over the past 2 years in particular, there was a very effective ad. It showed in cinemas quite a bit, actually. I think it was the RNLI that put it out. advising people what to do if they find themselves getting into difficulty and potentially drowning. And one of the big things it was just saying to people, first and foremost, don't panic. Has there been any evidence that that campaign worked? Because it certainly seemed to me, I saw it quite a bit, certainly last year and in the first few months of this year. Any indications, any sort of figures coming through to show that that campaign had an effect?
I've certainly heard it from individuals that it's very effective. However, I don't have figures from the RNLI on it, but certainly I see the combined efforts between the campaign there with the RNLI, the campaigns with the Coast Guard, our own campaigns on staying away from edges, float like a starfish. All of these campaigns speak to one issue, that no matter what you do, if you get into difficulty, don't panic, float on your back, and if you can, swim at an angle back to shore. And that's the main point, irrespective of the agencies that are involved. And I know the Coast Guard volunteers, the Water Safety Ireland volunteers, the RNLI volunteers, they're all out there speaking to this and trying to get the message across that the big thing is not to panic. And also, there are other issues too. You know, we look at children, for example. You know, in the last 7 years, 29 children drowned in this country, and that's nearly a classroom of kids, really. And in that period, you know, supervision is something that we started to see as a key factor. So there's the responsibility for yourself and for your loved ones, and especially with children, just keep an eye on them and don't take your eye off them for a second. You know, we have a great website with all the resources for early learning centres called Hold Hands, holdhands.ie. If anybody has young children, go on there. There's lots of fun stuff that children can learn, because, you know, in this country, I think culturally, there's been an unhealthy fear of water. A lot of people grew up being warned not to, don't go near that water. But I think what we need to do is, if we can turn that that cultural fear of water into a healthy respect for water. And how we do that is by learning the dangers, because if you're afraid of something, you won't learn about it, and you certainly won't tell your children about it. But if you learn about the dangers, then they'll have a respect for it, and indeed they'll embrace it, because our own volunteers teach these lifeguards from a very young age.
We had a discussion
in primary school, and they go through the whole series.
Yeah, we had a discussion on the program yesterday about the old PSAs, the public service ads that used to be on television. Now, it was in the context of farm safety, but I mean, I certainly recall way back, and I'm talking probably early to mid 70s, an ad that it used to be called the Where's Grandad ad, and it was all about a family that was picnicking on the side of a river, and Grandad was sitting on a deck chair close to the water, and then one of the children looked up and just went, "Where's Grandad?" And you just saw the empty chair, and it was quite clear what was after happening. And they were very effective ads in their time that brought home very stark messages as to what could happen if care wasn't being taken. Is there an argument that says we need to get back to those days where there needs to be more public service ads and messages coming out and put on terrestrial television, but also being put on social media, that people like yourselves, Coast Guard, RNLI, Government, Department of Marine and others should be putting up more and more of these campaigns? Because we have World Drowning Prevention Day tomorrow. I'm going to be absolutely honest, before I read the brief for this morning's programme, I didn't know that.
Absolutely. And World Drowning Prevention Day is in its infancy, really, in that the resolution passed in April 21. And so as a country, we've been helping a lot in terms of rolling out a lot of the associated pieces, not only here, but internationally. But I agree with you, Greg. I think the public service announcements, they need to continue. A lot of the agencies, the media agencies, are very good to us in terms of what they give us, in terms of broadcasting these messages. And some people really come on board and help us. You know, we've had people like Liam Neeson, the actor, Irish actor, promoting this need for responsibility, the need for people to wear a life jacket, the need for people to swim within their depth, swim at a lifeguarded waterway, learn life-saving skills, learn swimming skills. So all these things, absolutely, they need to continue, and they need to be prioritised. And even to put it into perspective, we had 1,300 deaths on our roads and water combined, Greg, over 5 years, and nearly half of them were drownings. Of the road and water deaths, 45% of them. So that puts it into perspective that it is a significant public health issue, really. But certainly the campaigns will continue. Any of listeners who are friends of ours on Facebook and the various social media channels will see our daily posts about safety. But I think as well, I think at the end of the day, especially with World Drowning Prevention Day tomorrow, people need to have that conversation with loved ones. It's not when the weather is really hot
yeah.
and they're hopping out to the beach. The conversation needs to happen today, tomorrow, in advance of going to the water. And the best way to do that is get onto watersafety.ie and just learn the tips and have those conversations and play some of those videos to the children. There's a 7-minute video there. It sounds like a long time, but at the end of the day, 7 children drowned last year. So if people took 7 minutes to watch yep. that safety video on watersafety.ie, it would do a lot to start changing the culture and make people more aware and responsible.
Roger Sweeney, Deputy CEO and Marketing Manager at Water Safety Ireland. Thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. World Drowning Prevention Day tomorrow. And we look forward to speaking to you again in the future. Roger, for the moment, thank you. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's 25 to 12. It's Wednesday, and that means time for this.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by Local Enterprise Office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the Local Enterprise Office team to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
And we're joined in studio this morning by Chris Ashmore. Chris, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal.
Lots to get through on the slot today, and I know we're going to be talking about one of your absolute favourite subjects a little bit later on, and we'll get to that in due course. But we'll start with the business news, and as ever, opportunities to be flagged, and the local enterprise office as ever to the fore.
Yes, just to highlight a couple of things coming up. This Friday, there'll be a one-day boot camp for the Start Your Own Business programme in the local enterprise office in Letterkenny. So, look, if you want to get guidance and information on how to get your own business underway, this is a great opportunity. You can go onto the website and register for that, and that is free, so well worth having a look at that. And also, just to let people know that the closing date for applications for the Ambition Programme, which is geared towards female entrepreneurs, the closing date is next Wednesday. Again, go to the local enterprise office, and you know, essentially, this is a big helping hand that is available, big supports out there for that. So, again, just wanted to highlight that.
Interesting seminar coming up on the value of golf to the economy. And we saw the Open in Royal Troon over the past couple of days. It's going to be a lot closer next year.
Well, this is it. Royal Portrush Golf Club is hosting the 153rd Open. Now, it's next July, the 13th to the 20th of July. And the spin-off, now, you hear figures bandied about, but the last time it was held there, which was 2019, they actually attracted what was a record for an Open. 237,000 people filed through to watch it. They reckon it generated over £100 million sterling for the Northern Ireland economy. And, of course, some of that would have filtered out here to Donegal because every B&B and hotel within a probably 70, 80 mile radius was booked up and brought huge crowds, and there is that spin-off for that. So, you know, it just shows the importance of big tournaments for that. And just, you know, I was interested to note the ticket prices, because it is such a prestigious event. They start at £100 sterling for adults on championship days. So, you know, you're talking sort of on a scale with All-Ireland finals, big rugby internationals. So, you know, not too bad. It's not particularly dear given the size of the event and the prestige. So, by the way, there's a ticket ballot which expires next Wednesday. You can get in for that, and there's actually half price youth tickets and kids go free program, but tickets are limited. So you can go to theopen.com/ticket-ballot if you are interested in that.
And we know a lot of interest has happened golf-wise in Ballyliffin in recent years. And we had a conversation with them recently when that big amateur competition took place just a few weeks back. And indeed, the option potentially of Ballyliffin hosting the Open at some point in the future has been floated. And make no mistake about it, it'll be a huge undertaking, but it is a realistic option, and it could happen.
Yeah, and golf tourism, as we know, is really important for counties like Donegal. And a lot of these visitors who are coming in on specific packages certainly they are spending quite a lot of money.
Let's talk about SkillNet, because SkillNet's proved a very important way for people to upgrade their skills, and a lot happening in this region.
Now, yeah, SkillNet Ireland, it was actually set up 25 years ago, and it provides programs to businesses, really to, as the name says, to upskill people. So last year, we've just had the annual report out, and they are saying that 6,000 people and 1,500 businesses between Donegal, Sligo and Leitrim, that's in the one area, benefited from programs that they ran last year. And 60% of those who undertook training were men, 40% were women, and the largest group, people aged between 30 and 39. So life is a never-ending learning curve. And, you know, years ago, people maybe did not move about employment as much as they do now. And you have to move with the times, I suppose, and upskill. And there are supports there, so it plays a very important role.
One of the big topics of discussion this year has been the deposit return scheme, and Aldi in particular in Donegal reporting June of one of its most successful months to date.
Yes, now interesting to note that in County Donegal, shoppers returned more than 425,000 items in June to Aldi stores. Now, it equates to €173,000 in vouchers being issued. The top three Aldi stores in Donegal in terms of the returns are Donegal Town and the two stores in Letterkenny. I've kind of got into the habit of it recently, but I'm still sort of an early convert. But, you know, if you think now nationally, Aldi stores took in 16.7 million items in June. That's what they took in. And then there's a lot of people who aren't doing it. And then there's all the other stores. Yep. So, you know, just the amount of plastic out there, the mind boggles, really.
No, absolutely. And top tip to anyone who's going to the machine for the first time, put it in base first.
Yes, and don't have it squashed.
Oh, no. Don't squash. Make sure the barcode's legible and put it in base first, because I've seen people try to push in with the sort of the capside first, and it bounces back and it bounces back. Base first, that's the key.
I think there's, it's like going to the self-service tills in some outlets. If there's a queue there, sometimes people are almost a little bit reluctant, because if they don't get it right, they're holding everybody up and they feel, this should be simple, but we're getting there.
Let's talk about Ryanair, and their profits are down, and I'm sure people across the country are weeping tears of solidarity.
Well, I threw this in just because everybody knows who Ryanair are, and like him or loathe Michael O'Leary, he has transformed air travel in Europe. Ryanair's net profit last year was €1.3 billion, so they had a big bounce back as the amount of activity got back to more normal levels following the down cycle during COVID. But the most recent quarter, the airline had a 46% fall in tax profits to only €360 million. So still one of the most efficient airlines in the world. Their load factor, now this is very important, you know, it's basically how many bums on seats that they get. That is still around the sort of 92, 93, 94%, which is very high compared to a lot of other airlines. And traffic grew in the last quarter to over 55 million. Ryanair, Donal, are going to fly in the region of 200 million people this year. You know, it's phenomenal when you think about it.
And here is a fun fact. I flew on Ryanair's very first plane, because what a lot of people don't know is Ryanair's very first route was from Waterford Airport to Luton Airport outside London. That was their very first route. Now, I wasn't on the first flight, but I flew Ryanair from Luton to Waterford and from Waterford to Luton. I was living and working in London at the time, and when I came home for my Christmas holidays, I had to go back on New Year's Eve, flew over on about the 19th of December, and I flew Ryanair both ways, and that was the very first plane and the very first route that Ryanair operated.
Well, I can't match that, but I did fly Ryanair from Carrickfinn, because they had a flight to Luton, and then it came back via Sligo, and it was a small plane because the 737s couldn't have landed. It was a turboprop.
Was the one I flew on. It was one of the Bombardiers or one of those.
And I have a piece to mark the, as it was the inaugural flight from Donegal to Luton, I have a piece of Ryanair crystal with the date, I think it was May 1990. Yeah. So, interesting, yeah.
Journalists and their freebies. I had to pay for mine because at the time I worked in a library. Let's talk about Ireland's population, Chris. And we're going to talk about in a moment about the potential impacts this may have, but some very high figures projected.
Yeah, now the latest projections are that Ireland's population could reach 7 million people by 2057. Now, you know, it's a figure and sometimes it doesn't really mean much to people, but I think when you look back, 1961 census it was, you know, the Republic of Ireland's population was 2.8 million. Like, the growth has been phenomenal. Now, this brings all sorts of demands, and one area that, which this is going to lead us into, is the massive investment that will be required in our infrastructure. In Dublin, there's a lot of concern about water supplies, electricity, with the data centres, you know, is the grid going to be able to support things? But on a national basis, our roads, our railways, transport is a very important sector.
Absolutely.
And this made me think, well, you know, there is the, we've heard about it on this programme before, the All-Ireland Rail Review, which there's been a lot of talk about this. It's made a lot of recommendations.
The details are pretty much known, but it still hasn't been officially fully published. We've had extracts and we've had elements of it, but
yes,
the full official publication of the whole kit and caboodle is due shortly.
Well, what essentially has held it back was because of the elections in the north, and it's not going to come out during a period when you're running into an election. Now, it has earmarked £37 billion for investment in railways, and make no mistake about it, and across Europe, there's a lot of money going into rail. From an environmental climate point of view, there's obviously advantages there. As populations go, it's a good way of moving a lot of people. And in Ireland, as many people may know, the Irish rail network, it shrunk over the years. And so I've been speaking with Steve Bradley, who's the driving force behind the Into the West Rail Lobby Group. Now it's campaigning for better rail, basically in the western half of the province of Ulster. And he is upbeat about the prospects that we will see in the not too distant future a railway connecting Letterkenny with Derry. And at least that will be a first step of Donegal being connected into a bigger network.
It's really important that people in Donegal believe that we can get rail back, because there's absolutely no reason why we can't. And if we don't believe and we don't start arguing for this stuff, all we're going to do is make it less likely that it will come back. But if you look at the rest of the islands, comparable counties to Donegal, as I mentioned, whether it be a Kerry or a Mayo or a Galway, you know, they're getting good roads and good rail. At the moment, we've none of the latter and very little of the former in Donegal. So we absolutely need to get those back. Other places have shown it's possible. There is no reason why Donegal can't also get it back. And we will. I'm absolutely convinced we'll get rail back to at least Letterkenny. And then after a while, people will just sort of think, why didn't we have it like this before?
Well, I said earlier that we'd be discussing an issue of interest to Chris, and I know Chris has always had an interest in rail. And Chris, certainly from what Steve Bradley is saying there, he believes there is going to be movement and we will see some form of rail restoration in Donegal.
Yeah, now the cost is obviously a big factor. There are estimates, ballpark maybe €550 million to make that connection between Derry and Letterkenny. Now, he will make the point that there's a lot of people in Donegal just don't think this is going to happen, but he says it's almost a defeatist attitude as such that, you know, why shouldn't Donegal have it? Other parts of the country have. And then he also, we mentioned during the discussion, Knock Airport. And, you know, at the time there was huge opposition. This was going to be a big white elephant. Mm-hmm. Look what that's done for the west of Ireland. And a big part of this all is regional balance, which is lacking. And the fact of the matter is there are 7 or 8 lines that they're looking at that could be reopened. One of them is Navan to Dublin. Navan, of course, big population. And so there's going to be a bit of a political bun fight to prioritise and where the money goes. But if Donegal gets nothing, well, then that infrastructural deficit is going to be even worse than it is at the moment. So he's saying, you know, don't be afraid to push for it and look for it, that we have as much right to have it. And the figures are borne out as well. You know, Letterkenny, the size of the town, it has that population mass that, you know, gives it some justification.
Right, we're going to take a short break, and after the break, back to discuss another issue, and we'll hear from our second guest. This is the Business Matters slot on the Lindsay Loon Show, and Chris Ashmore is in the studio with us, and we were speaking about rail and the importance of it before the break, and an in-depth interview with Stephen Bradley that is going to be available on the podcast. More on that anon. The other event that's been covered this week, Chris, is the 25th anniversary of the Donegal Women's Business Network.
They are hosting a major event in September, so do tell me more about it. I've been speaking with Larissa Feeney, who is the president of the Donegal Women in Business Network.
The 25th anniversary event of Donegal Women in Business Network is happening on the 19th of September at 1:30 in Loch Eff Castle. The theme of the event is Leading the Way, and we're really following that theme through the day, and we have Leading the Way with passion, leading the way with education, leading the way with customers. It will be a fantastic day for all women in business or women who are hoping to start a business or perhaps working in a business for somebody else. Everybody is welcome. If you're a member of the network or not, we'd be delighted to see you there.
And that was Larissa Feeney, that event taking place in September. And Chris Moore, on that, of course, too, on the Business Matters podcast and programme.
Yes, the podcast is live at the moment. The programme itself goes out on Sunday after the 6 o'clock news.
And if anyone wishes to get in touch with yourself, Chris, if there's anything to be followed up or any piece of news they may have, how can they do so?
Best way is to email me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Thank you, Chris. As we said, the podcast is live and the programme will be broadcast on air after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. Chris, for now, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by local enterprise office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the local enterprise office team to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Coming to the final moments of the 9 till noon show on this Wednesday morning. Just to let you know, a very important day for the show tomorrow, because Greg is back and the 9 till noon show comes from the Cancer Care West Centre on Letterkenny's Pierce Road from 9 a.m. until 12 noon. Greg will be speaking to a number of service users and providers about what the centre offers. If you've never visited the centre before, well, tomorrow is the chance to call in. It's an open day at Cancer Care West. Call in and say hello, and a hugely important service provided there by Cancer Care West, and I would absolutely encourage anyone to drop in there. The staff doing fantastic work. Let's close off with some comments. Religion discussion that we had has proved of great interest. A caller says, I don't believe in religion. That's what's wrong in the world. There's a division between people, and what counts at the end of the day is your personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Another caller says, John spoke a lot of sense. We are losing our traditional values. Anything seems acceptable in Ireland nowadays, and John is correct. It's Europe's dictate, and we have no say. Another caller says, in my opinion, the Catholic Church itself is to blame for the fact that people aren't attending Mass. The way they covered up for the abuse of children by moving abusive priests from one parish to another was shocking. Bishops got away with doing all this, even Bishop Casey, if anyone watched the programme about him on TV earlier this week. The facts are the Catholic schools are the most popular schools in Europe. When certain schools in the Dublin area were designated to become multi-denominational a few years ago, it was the parents who objected and the plans were dropped. In England, recognised as a Protestant nation, Catholic schools are the one most popular among parents when it comes to choice when deciding which school to send their children. Another caller says, the sooner religion is out of schools, the better. Did anyone see Bishop Casey documentary on RTE last night? Another caller says, do you really think an Islamic school would be teaching about any Christian religion? I don't think so. Do you think Muslim parents would really entertain their children being taught Catholicism? Not a chance. In the Catholic religion, why do people get married, baptized, communion, confirmation, and then don't attend Mass? If you have a belief, why don't you attend? I believe this is an abuse of the church. Another caller, again, the same point. I don't see Muslim or Islamic schools allowing the teaching of Catholic or any other faith in their schools. Regarding barristers, and we spoke earlier on about the barrister protest, the caller says they're already overpaid. Even if a case is up for mention, they're charging lots of money for a case that'll be mentioned for 2 minutes. There may be multiple mentioned cases. Another caller says what transpired in Rathnala was all to do with the Orange Order and Loyalists. There are hundreds of thousands of Protestants who are Irish and have no connection whatsoever with the Union flags and the paraphernalia that accompany their parades. Just want to say there will be a Garda drop-in clinic at Muff Community Centre between 12 and 1 on Friday, the 26th of July. Community Garda Anne McGreal will be there for any advice that people may need. A message in from Adrian. Grave disturbed. Remelton is, I'm afraid, the sad heading here. I've just called to my parents' grave in St Mary's Graveyard today to discover that some people have stolen the black stones I placed on my parents' grave. It's just heartbreaking that my parents' grave was so disrespected. I want to make your listeners aware. Adrian, we're so sorry to hear about that, and hopefully you will find some peace, and I'm sure it's being looked into, but no, really, really sorry to hear that, Adrian, and things like that. It's just reprehensible. It's just reprehensible. That's the only word for it. And so we come to the end of the 9 till noon show for this Wednesday morning. I've really enjoyed presenting the past 3 days, and thank you very much indeed for the welcome I've received. Greg is back, as we say, tomorrow. That show coming tomorrow from the Cancer Care West Centre on Pierce Road in Letterkenny. Want to say a very special thank you to Caroline, who produced and looked after me as always. Shannon took your calls as well. Want to say thanks to all our contributors to the programme this morning, to all who sent in texts and messages. Most importantly, thank you to you for listening. Greg's back, as we say, tomorrow. Up next, John Breslin is around the Northwest. But for myself, Donald Kavanagh, have a very good day.